The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, Paco, should we tell them about the SupDoc logo?
Sure. So we watched How to Draw a Bunny, and we liked the Lucky Strike logo so much that we used it for our podcast.
Let's not say that we used it.
Okay. We sampled it. Yeah. Hey, I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen, and you're listening to SupDoc, our podcast where we talk to interesting, creative people about their favorite documentaries.
And today's doc, How to Draw a Bunny, is about the life of the reclusive artist Ray Johnson.
One of the seminal figures of the Fluxus and mail art movements, Johnson also created the New York Correspondence School, which continues to this day.
And our guest for today to discuss How to Draw a Bunny is San Francisco comedy booker and producer Jeff Zamaria. So we're here with Jeff Zamaria. Hello,
Hi.
Jeff.
Hi, Paco. How
Hi.
Are you?
And George is here
you.
As well.
Hello. I'm here as well.
Hello, and George.
And we are talking today about How to Draw a Bunny, the documentary.
Yeah, yeah. And Jeff, you chose this documentary. Why?
I don't know. I like it, and I feel like I can relate to him in terms of his artwork anyway. And then, I don't know, I really like what they say about him in the movie. I think there's a lot of cool things that are said by a lot of influential people, and I don't know. It just makes me think quite a bit.
Now, you say you relate to his art. In what sense do you relate to his art? The fact that it's undocumented or it's sort of underappreciated? You feel underappreciated is what I'm saying.
What's wrong with you, Jeff?
Duh. No, mostly like the kind of art, like collage art. Like mm-hmm. I started making collage art when I moved to California. And then a few years after that, I saw this documentary and I lit up kind of. I was like, wow, a lot of this stuff is like really similar. Like mine's obviously more simple and I try to be more humorous in it, but I saw a lot of similarities in you know, the stuff that I did and the stuff that he did, and everybody thought his stuff was great. And I was like, wow.
Now, yeah. I don't know a lot about your background. When did you move to California? Had you already started making art? Is this a thing you've been doing? Or?
Not really. I went to school for photography, so that was like my main thing for a while.
Where'd you go?
University of Missouri, St. Louis. Okay. And then I came to California in 2003. I lived in LA for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I just really, to be honest with you, I started, that was the other thing. Like he made postcard art and I'd never heard of that. Like, and I was doing that. I was just mailing my friends really dumb collages on postcards. Cause, when I first moved to LA, I noticed that you could get free postcards by the bathroom. And I never saw that in St. Louis. I was like, wow, you can just take these. Yeah. And like, you know, a lot of them were
LA's
very
a magical place.
Yeah. Well, sometimes. And then, you know, I just started covering up that image with a blank background and then starting from there. And I just thought it was great that you could just get postcards. I mean, I used to mail photos themselves, but it was kind of cool that I would try to manipulate what was already on. Cause a lot of them were cigarettes or, you know, get home safe ads or AT&T or something like that. So it started out with like me trying to manipulate what
you're
was
talking already more
on.
Like about like the free things that would be at like the, at the bar. The,
yeah.
The,
like
the
right when you
shop, like does the promo.
Yeah. The promo things for whatever it is really. Yeah. Most of them were like, you know, get home safe or call a friend. Mm-hmm.
I used to take those and make flyers for the Romain Event Comedy Show and then put them back in those things.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a pretty good idea, too.
And then I remember when somebody was like, that's so ghetto. I'm like, no, it's free. It's not ghetto. It's totally free.
Yeah, people like getting stuff in the mail. I find that people don't really... I think they don't really overall appreciate it because, like, you never know when somebody gets something because they don't. I don't know, but
there's no direct response.
It's fine. It's just for you anyway.
But people were collecting the Ray Johnson stuff. Like, Warhol was like asking people. He would just try to get them from other people whenever he had one of those sent out.
Yeah.
I think there's some. There could be for your generation, maybe not his generation, but there's some connection to the graffiti world slightly. Did you ever get into that at all?
Not really. I mean, I always thought good graffiti was cool, but like, you know, tagging and all that kind of stuff was kind of boring and depressing, but.
Well, it reminds me of that thing where people just take those U.S. postal stickers and then just like stencil those or turn those into tag stickers.
Or the Hello My Name Is stickers and stuff like that. They were already blank. Yeah. Cause the postal service ones are free. I mean, I would use those for because they were all white, you could cut off the, I would use those sometimes to make, to cover up like a cigarette logo or whatever it was on the thing. But
you were a photography guy mostly.
Yeah, I started out photography. And then I was really, really into it. And then I had my own dark room and everything in my closet in St. Louis, moved to LA and just didn't really do it. And then everything became digital. And I always tried to stay away from that. And then I was still taking photos when I came here. I had a big project that I was doing that I still have like 10 rolls that I need to get developed on.
But oh, like you haven't developed the rolls?
No,
last for like, they last more than 10 years?
No, they're not in the freezer, but...
Fridge, yeah.
No, they're on my desk, but... now they're on my desk. They were in a drawer for a while. Yeah. I found them, but yeah, I need to take them to, you know, photo work.
Just like a typical artist, man.
Was the college you went to like an art school?
No, it was just regular, yeah. Yeah, I went there and then community college as well. And then when I went to the community college, I pretty much just took the classes just to use the dark room, and then I would go home.
Were
stuff,
you so. Involved in correspondence with the art in the mail, or was it just you? Was it just you?
It was just me. I would just randomly send. It started when I moved to California because most of my friends like didn't move. You know, they would move back. Like St. Louis is a place where you move to Chicago or you move to Kansas City or maybe Denver, and then you move back. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's why my friends always thought I was so cool because I never moved back for some reason. You know, so it's like getting things from California is also kind of cool.
Yeah, it is.
If you've never been there and all that kind of stuff. So
especially if it's a drunk driving free postcard.
Yeah, it turned into something like creepy. Or sexual or something like that.
All right. So around the time you moved to California, this is like this came out in 2002. So it was maybe like you saw it in theaters or like right.
No, I saw it in on DVD. Mm-hmm. There was a place, I don't remember it. It was right near the 405, and it was kind of like a La Video, but in LA, because we would always me and my girlfriend would always just watch documentaries a lot, you know, and we would just find weird ones. And I heard something about this one, and yeah, we drove in a car to go rent a DVD, and we brought it back like 2 days later. It was awesome.
God, you're so old.
And that's why we broke up. but no, yeah, we would seek them out, and yeah, I saw it on DVD, and then it was hard to find for some reason. And then now, you know, you could get it on Amazon probably, or I even put it on YouTube the other day to show somebody a clip of it. So the whole movie is on YouTube, you know,
that's where I watched it was YouTube. So were you a fan of Ray Johnson's prior to this?
I'd to be honest with you, I'd never really heard of him. You know, I had seen that one James Dean, Lucky Strike thing. Uh-huh. And I had made something with a Lucky Strike logo that I really liked a long time ago, but I don't know what happened to it. I lost it. And then I saw that and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. This is what the other stuff looks like.
Why is the Lucky Strike logo so compelling?
I don't know. I think it's just kind of, for me, I think it's just like a classic shitty company logo, you know, and it's like the whole, it's toasted. A lot of people, you know, I just think it's like a classic thing. Like it's like, I don't really like Coke, even though that's a classic logo, but a lot of people don't even know what Lucky Strike is. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even, I'm sure they still make them.
I think is it the same logo? Still?
I think it is the same. Yeah. I mean, it was the same logo, you know, years ago when I started making these. So, and I would always find those and cut them out too. Not necessarily use them, but I like, would just cut them out. And
yeah. Like I thought I was fairly, I'm not like a big art history person, but like I knew a bit about Fluxus and I knew, you know, I know some of the people that were around the Warhol scene. I had not heard of him and I had not heard of this movie, but once I watched this, I realized, I think there was a whole show of correspondence art at the Berkeley Art Museum a couple years ago. And I think it was a Ray Johnson show, because I remember seeing the logo and seeing a lot of those same names show up. It's like, oh, it's like John Cage and Merce Cunningham and all these people. I think that was a show at Berkeley Art Museum. So I've definitely seen that those graphics before and didn't have a context for what it was. So and that's one of those things. Once you see it, you're going to always look for it. Yeah. Sort of like that, you know, like that Crying of Lot 49, that like muted trumpet thing, like people have tattoos of that. You'll see graffiti of that in the bathroom, and it's like, I'm like, oh, now that I know what it is, I'm gonna see it everywhere. Were you a fan of like the Warhol world before all this?
Yeah, I always liked his art too, because it was pretty simple to me. It wasn't boring simple, but I don't know. And I really like just like the classic kind of American company symbols that, I mean, are probably now evil.
You know, like this Campbell soup.
Yeah,
and stuff
things
like that.
Yeah, like that are, you know, probably evil today by today's standards. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, were, you know, kind of a wholesome, comforting logo in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that with a Lucky Strike too. Like it's like, it's just kind of like a simple, I don't know, just recognizable, or it's almost like comfortable because you see it so often or whatever.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I was thinking about like, yeah, like the whole, I was being from a music side, finding out about Velvet Underground, and then finding out that they were basically a band that got put together by Warhol that sort of broke some stuff open about that. Like, I didn't know about a lot about that world, or like there was so many like small like lesser celebrities that were in the Warhol world, like the people that were just like hangers on. But it seemed like he considered Ray to be, you know, a peer.
Yeah.
It seemed like, and he collected his stuff.
Right. Yeah, I do remember hearing that he was asking people to send him any of the correspondence stuff, and he'd pay them for it. And and then we were talking before we started recording about his friend that shot the Warhols. The Shot Warhols, is that what they're called?
Yeah. Shot so Maryland's, right?
The Shot Maryland's.
Oh, I mean, Shot Maryland's.
Yeah, the Shot Warhols, if you Google that, you get Valerie Solanas.
Right.
But no, Dorothy Podber, this is mentioned in the doc. And there's just still photos of her from back then. They didn't interview her, even though she died. She was still alive when this was made. I guess she might have declined an interview. But yeah, she was the one. She was like kind of the chaos imp that hung out with Ray Johnson. They were like this duo that would run around New York art scene stuff and like cause havoc. But it seems like his was always a subtle kind of just subtly fucking with people.
Yeah.
And she was just like, oh, I brought a gun to Warhol's factory.
I'm going
to
shoot people.
And shot the silk screens.
And by the way, I love Chaos Imp's first album.
Okay. Yeah. No, they're good. They were on amazing. On Tim Kerr Records.
Yeah. They were great. No, you're right. And that's what I liked about, that's what I love about Ray Johnson. It's like his, that sense of humor. He's so fucking, he fucks with people, and they have that moment where he goes to that party. You remember that in the doc?
Where he goes to, like that they filmed him at the party. Okay. Yeah. So there's the guy who's filming him. Right. There's a guy who's filming him.
And then it's all the thing is so early 90s and everyone's acid wash jeans. And
It really was like a early 90s slice of fashion.
The guy with the mullet.
Yeah.
And it just looks like, so uncomfortable.
I'm fucking with you. I'm like, this is an art piece where I'm playing the role of an artist who's explaining that I'm an artist to you.
I'm having a good time.
Yeah. Dude, so are you a big fan now since you've seen the doc?
I'm upset that I didn't know that his show was in Berkeley, like George mentioned, actually. But yeah, now I kind of seek it out and... Yeah, note like he was saying about things, notice it more every now and then, especially the rabbit or the bunny, sorry. That's his like logo, I guess.
Yeah, there's kind of multiple versions of that. There's like the more like the black silhouetted one, and then there's like the ones that look like kind of like the Kilroy Was Here, kind of like that, of like little graffiti, like just little bunny head. I like that all the portraits was just the name of the person under the bunnies that looked exactly identical, but whether they were like looking up or down seemed to be the only indication of.
And those were portraits.
Yes. Yeah.
That's so cool. Good.
And the Black Mountain College thing, I think that's like a huge like modern art spot. Like in the, I guess, was it the 40s or 50s that he was there?
48.
He was at Black Mountain. And I guess who was Jasper Johns and Rauschenberg were there, or was it just Jasper Johns was there with him?
It was at both.
Yeah, all those guys.
Exactly. And
who's that guy that he was like kind of his mentor / lover? Dude, I'm kind of blanked on the name.
They had
good interviews with him. Yeah.
That was
sweatshirt.
That was what was
it? I said he had a cool sweatshirt. Sorry,
we'll fix it in post.
It was like a Nehru jacket sweatshirt, but it says, Black Mountain. It was like Black Mountain has assumed mythic proportions in the history of American art as a training ground for major art trends that exploded in the 50s and 60s.
Did you feel like you what other ways do you feel like you related to Ray?
I guess in the way that like a lot of people, he has a lot. He did create a lot of stuff, but nobody saw a lot of it. You know, like he would maybe keep it to himself or whatever. And that's kind of what I do. It's like that's the only thing that I am selfish about. I feel like I'm not worried about. I'm not worried about myself in the typical way. Or I always put other people forward. But for some reason, like now, it's harder for me to just make something and send it to somebody because like I am actually. It does make me happy. It's like something that I'm actually happy with that I did myself. And it's like in a selfish way, I kind of make them for other people, but just to keep now, and then they can have them later. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was kind of cool. Like he died, and like these like $1 million each. Like I've actually thought about that when I was younger. I was like, we should make things and like price them before we die. That way people will have this fake demand for it or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The way that all the discussions he would have about the price, that was like still part of the art, was like the discussion. Yeah. Oh yeah. The
letter back and forth is definitely part of it. He's like, yeah,
so good.
And he would take he wanted $2,000 for something, I'll give you $1,500. He's like, okay. And he would take a fourth of the collage out, which made it just as cool looking at it. You know,
now, are you still making collages regularly?
Yeah. Not regularly. I haven't made anything in like a few months, but I'm starting to do it now. I'm gonna have a little more time, but yeah.
And for people that don't know Jeff, Jeff is the, what would you say, you're like the, are you the booker at Docs?
Yeah, the comedy booker.
The comedy booker. The vanity music manager. Stuff. Someone else is
music,
doing
that stuff. Primarily. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can book bands if I want. I just know more comics
at Docs Lab.
At Docs Lab
in San Francisco, which is part of
the building's the old Purple Onion.
The old Purple Onion. Yeah. Yes.
Same spot, just renovated.
Where I recorded my comedy album.
That's right.
Yeah.
What? Shaped like a thumb drive.
Shaped like a thumbnail. I wish.
That was sniffed out by a federal dog. Okay. You guys don't know what I'm talking about because that was not recorded.
Pre-roll.
You tend to put other people before yourself. Do you feel that way as a booker, or as like your contribution in an artistic way is just being a facilitator of things?
Yeah, I definitely. That's probably one of my biggest problems. I put everybody before myself anyway, in like terms of pretty much anything. But yeah, when I would make the art, it was kind of about me. It was like a lot of it started just trying to make myself laugh, and I'm like, oh, that's clever. Mm-hmm. And then I remember the first time that I put any of these, anything that I made up at a show kind of thing, where a bunch of people put art up and it was kind of more like a party. But people would come up to me and they're like, oh, that's pretty clever. And I'm like, oh, thanks. And then there's this one guy that I used to work with named Arthur. And he's like, he saw something that I made. He's like, I know you didn't mean that when you made it, but it looks pretty good. And I'm like, yeah, fuck you. Cause I didn't mean that when I made it. But then like when I stared at it, like an hour after I made it, I was like, oh, that's really good. And I didn't really,
you did see something that you didn't intend.
Yeah. And he was like,
in a collage. What was it?
Yeah. It was a postcard that I found here is when I made it here. It was for somebody else's art show, but it was a John F. Kennedy black and white kind of like dotted,
dot
solid,
matrix.
But yeah, kind of, yeah, sort of like that. So I just, I made it look like he had a black eye. And then I used to get magazines from, well, I still do, from the magazine. I think that's the store on Pull.
Okay.
So I found an ad for a 63, I think it's Pontiac Rambler. And I put, I cut out Rambler and put it above his head. And I wasn't really thinking about it as I made it, but he had a black eye and I was like, oh, Rambler, And then it was like and then the slogan at the time for that car was the new standard of American excellence. Mm-hmm. So it was like Rambler 63, the new standard of American excellence, John Kennedy with a black eye. You know what I mean?
There's some subconscious work going on.
Yeah, but that was honestly something that I made and I was like, this is that. Okay. Cause I didn't think about the whole 63 as well. And I just was like Rambler, like, boxer. Got hit in the face, and then he was kind of, and then it's like people had so much hope in him, he was the new standard, for
that
a while.
That is true.
Yeah, it just worked out like that, and that made me, that single one, I actually have it blown up. It's in our kitchen.
Can you send us a copy of it so we can put it on our site?
Definitely.
Along with this,
that'd be cool. I was gonna say, like, and going back to this a little bit more about you, because you also did stand up right before you were doing.
I saw
right?
that, huh? Yeah.
I remember people used to say that you were really funny.
Oh, that's nice. Very kind of them to lie. Yeah, I did it very briefly for, like 2 years, when after the, I worked at Cobb's for a few years and I was like, okay, yeah, maybe. And then I had a lot of friends that were doing it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then it got to the point where, I wasn't taking it that seriously. People that I was going out with, like Jules and Cameron and people like that were out there way more. And I was like, okay. And then maybe I just kind of backed off and did it every now and then. And then once I got in any sort of position to like give people stage time at either one of the clubs, I was like, I'll leave it up to these guys. And from then on, I just stopped. Then I hosted like a show after that. I don't know, maybe it wasn't you I was telling, but somebody asked me the last time I did stand up and I just sang to them that September song. Do you remember the 23rd night in September? Because the 23rd night in September was the last time I did stand up, 2010, I think. So,
wow.
I'm going to try to never do it. So I can always just, do have to do it, I'm like, I'll do your show, but can we move it to the 23rd of September?
Yeah. Or pick a different date that's in a song.
Is that Guy Fawkes?
No, what I like that song. Okay. No, that's, we could pick a different date for sure, but.
But, like you say you want to have humor in the collages that you're doing. So it's like, that's still like an outlet for that impulse, right?
Yeah, definitely now. And I've been putting, I was avoiding it for a while, but now I just kind of put them on Instagram because like a couple of people are like, yeah, you should show people. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Maybe I will.
It seems very Midwestern to have like humor in pop art.
Yeah, like using like logos and things like that.
Yeah, well, just subtle humor and like overt humor and puns and stuff.
Yeah.
It seems like a very Midwestern thing to me. Just because there's a streak of sarcasm that runs through the great Midwest.
I think collage art, maybe collage art's even kind of a Midwestern thing. Because we definitely had to make collages. So we were asked to make quite a few collages.
This is your Instagram.
We had to make quite a few of them for class. But I didn't... The ones I made back then were crappy. They were just like... Right. I wasn't worried about cutting things out. Like, all those things are... everything I do, I also cut out. Because I can't draw.
My name's Jeff on Instagram, if you want to see what we're talking about.
We'll link that.
But yeah, because I can't draw, I can't paint. Yeah. So I basically have to steal other people's stuff and kind of manipulate it in a way.
I like when... So, like, they...
You must know Winston Smith, right? Do you go to Winston Smith?
Mm-mm.
He's good. He did a lot of the Dead Kennedys art.
Oh, okay.
The collage, those album covers are all collage.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I like how the documentary makes a point of saying that his art didn't end when he was done in the studio. Like with him, he was his art and the art was like what he was doing. And there wasn't really
A separation.
Like
that's what I like about him.
Yeah.
Too. Like once I started learning about him, I was like, oh, he's so funny and he's so talented, but he's so fucking subtle about everything that he does. And
yeah,
that's what makes it, even if it's bullshit, like the strong, silent kind of thing makes it like you can be pretty cool if you just don't talk a lot. Sometimes.
Well, and those guys generally, you know, they're under the radar.
That's Midwest, right?
They don't. Yeah, that is very Midwest, where they don't make a lot of the money and they're not in a lot of the history books, but they're kind of like an artist or a comedian's comedian kind of guy. And it's once they're gone is when people really start seeking out their work and be like, God, this guy was fucking amazing.
Well, I mean, the movie does open almost like this backwards, like mystery, right? Like it opens with, Here's a flash of this guy talking. Then there's just like body found. This is 95 when his body is found, and they kind of just try to work backwards and figure out what happened. But I wonder if that was a driving thing for him. Like the idea, he seemed to have this back and forth thing about being recognized or not being recognized, or having success or having his peers be successful, and his relationship to that. He seemed to be, maybe that's what the haggling about the money was about for him, because he would like haggle over the price, but it wasn't a haggle like necessarily like he's trying to jack it up so much. He'd be like, I'm gonna throw it. I like the one where someone offered him like $1,500 for something he said was gonna be $2,000, and then he just mailed it to them and he just cut a quarter out of it.
Right.
Like that's kind of hilarious to me. That is very funny. But I feel like the reason, is it giving too much away to explain like how it ends? It's not. It's basically the police just say that it's a suicide.
Right.
But is it an art piece?
Right.
And is it his ultimate art piece? But is it also just he was actually upset about his place in the art world, and that also drove it to that point? He's like realized like no one's going to appreciate this. I won't have anything to sell. He has one of the gallerists, I think, he tells her right before the death, he tells her, I'm going to finally be able to have something for you to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, great, that's exciting.
Yeah.
And because I also like that one of his things he talks about is like his idea of a show is he calls it a nothing. Because there's no object. There's no thing. It's a performance or it's something else that's not sellable.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I stopped making nothing.
Yeah.
Which is like, did you make an object or did you stop being anything altogether as a person, a.k.a. did you, you know, cash in your chips?
Right. So, well, I'm going to – I have a friend of a friend who I've met a couple times who's in the correspondence art world, knew Ray Johnson, and I asked him if he had anything to add to this conversation. He sent me this wonderfully written, which basically is an obituary for Ray Johnson. It's called Bunny Dead, The Mysterious Life and Death of Ray Johnson, The Rise of the New York Correspondence School of Art. And in this two-page obituary, he did write, he was mentioning, for one, that Johnson was not driven... career-driven as like a lot of the other artists, in that he didn't want, wasn't kind of, he seemed satisfied with underground reputation scoring mainstream acceptance. But he does add this bit where he says he was known to enter galleries on the last day of a show to take away all of his work before the unwitting dealer could explain the positive ramifications of letting them remain.
I read this also. Yeah, I saw this.
That's pretty great. The idea that he would come in on the last day and be like, I'm taking all this. You don't get any of it. I think that's pretty sweet. I like one of my favorite things. Well, okay, I got a couple points, which is I did read some reviews where people were like, this doc was misleading because they thought it was a kind of a crime-driven doc about his death and the mysterious death. Was he killed? Was he pushed?
In the first 5 minutes, you could see that.
In the last 10,
Yeah, and it really isn't that. It's more about the life of this artist. And if you really want to get into the life of his contemporaries, this is also not the doc for that because they just kind of go to Christo and Chuck Close a little bit and talk to him. But one of my favorite parts in this doc was the foot dogs. The hot dogs that he threw from the helicopter.
As a performance, that's an amazing performance.
No, I was like, I love this guy already.
I watched the movie again the other day with a friend of mine, and she was laughing, and she was like, did he really do that? And I was like, watch. And then they really did it, and she was like, what would you, she asked me, she's like, what would you do if the hot dogs fell out of the sky? Would you eat it? And I was like, yeah, I would eat it. She's like, you would eat it? And I was like, yes, if a hot dog fell, look at me, if a hot dog fell out of the sky, and even if it hit the ground, even if it was there for more than 5 seconds, yes, I would put it in my fucking mouth. Yes, of course I would eat it.
Well, that's what he's saying in the doc. He's like, people were eating the hot dogs.
Why? And that's why she asked me. She's like, would you do that? I'm like, Of course I would eat a hot dog.
A raining hot dog?
I would make you eat a hot dog, you know what I mean?
Wasn't there like meatball? What's the rainy meatball?
Cloudy with a chance of meatballs. Yeah.
It's the same kind
Those are supposed to be pretty good. Anyway.
I thought that was great. I was like, I love like artists that have not only like that childish sense, kind of like Zappa, you know, like he actually has an album called Does Humor Belong in Music? It's like, it's the same kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, he has he's obviously brilliant and a genius, but he has this like childish sense of humor, which just, it's such a nice balancing act for that kind of stuff.
You know, Ray sent out such a massive material that the idea that you were supposed to be collecting it and that, you know, it would have some sort of value if you collected it together was never the case. For me, it was just a means of communication. And it was all very much contained within his own terms.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Correspondence art consists of compression of ideas and images into envelopes, and I've spent my entire life condensing in a conceptual art fashion, fitting things to fit envelope sizes and folding things to fold into envelopes. I've gone through this ritual day after day, year after year, for many, many years. That's my working process when I'm in my studio. I'm not static at all. I'm completely fluid. I just go from one idea to the next. It's a complete flow of the imagination.
Jeff, what's the weirdest thing you've ever done for your art?
The weirdest thing I've ever done for my art? I don't really know. I think I just try to do weird things every day. Like I tell people, you know, every now and then somebody be like, oh, you're funny, you should do stand-up. I'm like, no, Like, why not? I was like, no, this is just for you. It's just disposable gold. You know what I mean? You can use it if you want, but it's just like.
Are you the Ray Johnson of comedy? We're finding out.
No, it's nice to entertain people and then pretend like you didn't really quick. You know what I mean? And then just have that be a thing all the time. And just,
well, I was there when the great Todd Glass gave you such a sweet compliment when he said it was unique to work with a booker who's also very funny in his own right.
Yeah, that was super nice of him.
Yeah, that was sweet. And it's very true. Another great thing about this doc was the Max Roach.
Oh gosh, yeah, stuff. The drums.
Yeah, sometimes it was a little loud, but I like it. But sometimes it was maybe it was just my television, but it was a little loud. Funny. You can still hear everything for the most part. But
this movie and Birdman back to back.
Right. I thought that was sweet because I like the fact that they would cut away to him playing the drums. Like, it's just a snare and some brushes, and it's sweet. I thought it was a great mix with this doc.
The other incidental music, I was like, this sounds so Sonic Youth, and then it was Thurston Moore, a lot of the loopy, feedbacky guitar, like prickly guitar stuff was Thurston Moore. Actually, like, there was a lot of really cool music used in this documentary.
Yeah.
I guess, like, you know, probably because of the associations, they got some good rights to it. There was even Velvet Underground in it. Yeah, they played some Velvet Underground in there, like no vocal mix Velvet Underground song, which makes sense because they talk about the factory world a lot. Mm-hmm. Also, like, I didn't know exactly how involved he was in Fluxus, and I thought I, like, knew. I don't know a ton about Fluxus, but I didn't realize he was sort of associated with them as well. Are you a fan of the Fluxus stuff at all?
Yeah, I am. I don't know much about it at all. I mean, like, this obituary I was talking about has some bits about Fluxus and about the Flux postal kits, which I've heard about in the past, about the, you know, artistic postage stamps and stuff like that. But I don't know much about that group.
Well, you know, the mail art thing seems to be the thing that he's most associated with. He's sort of considered this godfather of this form of art, which is mail art, which I like what you're doing. But he was also, like, mailing mannequin heads or getting mannequin heads mailed to him. And just like seeing what you could get away with in the postal system. Like, I think the rules also changed a lot since the 60s because they're really precise about what counts as a postcard anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you can still send photos. I sent a bag of M&Ms with a label on it and a couple stamps and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me that you can, if you put someone's if you put an address label on a phone book and mail it to somebody, they have to mail it to that person. I don't know if that's true because I haven't
postage free.
Yeah, like, if you actually put a label on it and someone's address and put it in a mailbox, I guess they have to. I don't know why.
Interesting. I remember when people were mailing leaves. Do you remember that?
No, that's pretty cool.
People were taking leaves and you can kind of iron them and make them a little plasticky. And I remember when people in college were mailing leaves because anything you put a stamp on and an address, they will mail.
Anthrax.
Except for,
a couple times it got through.
Yeah, a couple times it did get through. Yeah.
Bombs. Different documentary.
I also like in the movie how they talk, a lot of interesting people, a lot of people that I think are cool too, talk about how everyone knew him, but nobody knew anything about him kind of thing.
Even his lover, his long time lover from college was just like, I was intimate with him, but I don't know.
It's like everybody knows him, but nobody really knew if he was. Yeah. Like,
do you relate to that?
Yeah, completely. Cause nobody knows, nobody knows if I'm being serious or not. Cause I surround myself with comedians for the most part. And it's like, and I mean, I did that. I was doing that before I got anywhere near the comedy world, but if you don't think yourself is interesting, just make it. I don't know, make it that way. You know what I mean? Just like people would be like, "What was that?" I was like, "I don't know. Don't worry about it." Like,
that's the personal.
Like
touch.
You're doing bits constantly. Like there's always a Zamaria bit going on.
This whole thing is a bit.
Yeah.
No, but
it's a long bit.
I've got nothing but time. So no, it's just fun to entertain people in that way. You know.
Are there some other collage people that inspired you in collage? When you started doing collage, because obviously you didn't know about him when you started.
Yeah,
collage.
Not really. It was just, you know, I had a couple things that I'd made in high school that I was like, oh, that's really crappy. And then I bet I could make that cooler if I would just care a little more and things like that. But, no, I never really, I mean, my friend Carrie would make some stuff. What is it? Exquisite Corpses.
Oh yeah. Those are
things like that
to do,
too. Yeah. We'd do that. And she got into that for a while and, showed me, and then she actually made a record cover for her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And I actually got to make a record cover. It didn't come out how I liked it, but
what a band
an EP,
is it?
Steely Dan.
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, I wish. No, Downer Party. Remember the Downer Party?
Yeah.
Sierra's band.
For San Francisco.
Yeah. They moved, but she moved, but, for an EP called Blue State. And it was just a, it was a cutout of a map. I used to, I like to use maps too, maps and indexes. A lot of my stuff has that in it. And like, it was just a cutout of Ohio with a plug and Blue State.
I did one album cover for someone that wasn't a band that I was in. And it was kind of a collage idea, but it was based on someone said, like, what if you made, I want that photo from the Vietnam War of the guy shooting the other guy, but can you make them like the William Wegman dogs? And I had Photoshop, so I did that. So that's a Gang Wizard album cover that I put together.
Gang Wizard.
And I added like an oil tanker, oil tower in the back, but then they blacked it out. They're like, we don't like this political commentary you added to this Vietnamese dog shooting.
I also worked at a record store for a while too. So while I was making those, I would see a lot of the punk stuff, like Leftover Crack made some stupid, really bad like collage art stuff. But every now and then I would see a collage that it would make me want to listen to the record. We finally got like listening stations in, or I could, you know, go. Yeah.
Was this, where were you working at record store?
I worked at Rasputin, the one that was.
Oh, you did?
I did, yeah.
When was that? The Kenpire.
The Kenpire.
I'm familiar with the Kenpire.
Total pile.
Yeah, like we could do a whole, there should be a documentary about that guy. I watched the Tower Records documentary, and I'm like, but there's not a documentary about Ken Sarah.
Well, we should, honestly, we should.
There's so much shit to talk about, dude. There's also
a guy, side note, there's also a guy that works there named Pat that used to date, who was it, Edie Sidgwick.
Oh, really?
And he used to drive the Velvet Underground to gigs. Like there was this, there was a whole rumor about this guy that was like, oh, did you know Ken used to like be friends with the, like the, you know, Velvet Underground and stuff, like what? And then finally, like toward the end of me working
Ken
there.
Ken was, or this guy?
No,
Pat?
This guy, Pat. Okay, used to Pat work at the Berkeley store as well. He's like one of his oldest friends.
The guy with the eye patch?
No, he looks like Mr. Burns. He looks like Mr. Burns.
The guy with the eye patch?
But so one day me and my friend Michael, we like had a few drinks and then like came back to work and we were just like waiting for somebody and we were like, fuck it, let's just ask him, you know? Because it's like, he'll probably, and then we asked him, like, hey Pat, did you like know the Velvet Underground? He just kind of is counting his money. He's like, well, I mean, kind of. And they're like, all right, what's up? And he like told us something. He's like, yeah, he dated, because some people thought he dated Mo Tucker, I guess.
Really?
Or, from the, and it was, no, I dated Edie Sidgwick. And it was like taking care of it. It was like taking care of a kindergartner for the 2 weeks we dated. And he was like, yeah, I basically like drove them around to gigs. I was like the kid they thought was cool because I had a car in the city or something.
Oh, he
like
lived
that.
In New York?
I guess he lived in New York for a while. Yeah. So like he was kind of friends with them, but, and I thought about that when I watched a documentary. They talk about him being, you know, knowing Warhol and all those guys and stuff like that. But Ken, they should make a documentary about Ken. But yeah, I worked at Rasputin for, that was the longest job I've ever had. And I'm not even from here, which is weird. I worked there for a long time.
Oh, longer than any other?
Longer than any other record store or, well, not, yeah, not since. Well, since, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, now I've been working here longer, but yeah, it was weird. It was okay.
It's a high turnover rate.
And all you have to do is show up. It's insane. Like, I, you know, all you have to do is show up and then.
Yeah, but they treat you pretty poorly. I've been
they
told
do, but if you just,
angles.
If you just steal CDs. Every now and then it makes up for it. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that's why people are treated so terribly.
I got a job at Amoeba for a day.
Oh, a day?
I worked at Amoeba for a day as their jazz buyer. I was their jazz
that
buyer.
That's great.
You would think so. I was like, I'm done.
Really? One day of it? Yeah. Wow. And you worked in record labels too.
Yeah. This was post record labels.
I used to love buying people's records. The guy from Third Eye Blind, I guess, just started doing drugs and like would come up to our store and sell his records all the time. And he had really good stuff.
Oh, he's in the J.T. Leroy documentary.
Yes, he is.
He's got some great lines in there. Like, you're an old soul.
Right. Well, I worked for two people at Amoeba. My boss was named Sunshine. And then there's another, and there was a guy named Lightning that I worked with, and I just, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I'm not into working with weather people, I guess. But like, I thought it was cool that like he self-described his drawings, you know, the newspaper magazine stuff, as modicos.
Modicos, yeah.
Which remind me of emoticons. Like it's so close, and it has the same kind of feeling. I think that's kind of cool.
Right, like this was different than the postcards, or this was like an extension of it, or this is like a form of collage.
This was the a form of, yeah. He was what the stuff he was mailing, he called modicos, a self-described term he gave to his drawings, which he combined with newspaper and magazine photographs.
Now, like at a technical level, I was unclear. Like some things were maybe like when he would do a silhouette portrait of someone, would he then just make a bunch of Xeroxes of that and then add to the Xeroxes? Because he would have like 20 or 30 versions of one person.
Yeah, I think you would just
portrait.
Xerox just that. And then, I mean, sometimes the silhouette was like unrecognizable. You couldn't really tell.
There was so much.
And then
it.
Most of the time it was just the nose that you could get like a basis and then try to build from there and be like, oh, this is where this is. Yeah.
But I like that there's just iterations based on one thing. And then he also, like, his, like, pattern work in his actual like ink, like his there's a collage, but there is also like a lot of drawing that's in there, which I liked the kind of the smeariness of a lot of the collagey stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
The color,
I also like in the doc the Christo bit where he wants a package.
Oh yeah, that was a great thing. Where Christo and is it Jean and the his wife? But yeah, they were like they mail. He wants a package. Yeah. They mail him a package. Inside the package is a photograph of the package. And they're like, well, you want this art, but now you've destroyed it by opening it. Yeah. And here is a memorabilia of the art that you could have had intact.
Yeah, I think that's great.
It's just a total, like, they were just pranking him back.
They're fucking with him.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing. Are you a close fan, a Chuck Close fan?
What's that?
Are you
I mean, a little bit now, but didn't really know much about it before.
I wasn't... Before, but I went to see his exhibit at MoMA, SF MoMA, and it was amazing. I loved it. All those portraits and stuff that he did was incredible.
I just went to the Broad Museum in LA, which is all like pretty much like modern, like 20th century art. And there is a Chuck Close, and there is a lot of like Joseph Beuys. There is some other who's a Fluxus person there. Well, they also had like a lot of like Jeff Koons and things like that, and like Damien Hirst, like all these modern people, but yeah, I just thought I'd throw that out there. That's like related. Oh, there's a Rauschenberg and Jasper Johns.
Oh, right.
And they're also, who I didn't know were like involved. They were like a couple.
Yeah.
And like Merce Cunningham and John Cage were also a couple.
Yeah.
So when that guy from Black Mountain that was his professor that kind of became his lover.
Right.
It also seemed like there was this other, like, you know, there's like a lot of these gay art power couples came out of this Black Mountain world.
Man, I don't know. New York sounds so cool at that time. It's just like everybody was hanging out with each other and everyone was poor.
Paying $28 a month to.
The $28. That guy was great.
Yeah, that guy was great.
I wish I
could. Oh, was that Billy Name? Was that the hairdresser?
Yeah.
Billy Name, he's a hairdresser who worked with Warhol.
Billy Name. Yeah.
There's another artist who I think is really interesting and also like did a lot of performance stuff in that kind of New York period named Joseph Matta Clark. Or is it Gordon Matta? Joseph Matta. I'm now thinking Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I can't think of the... But, oh, Gordon Matta Clark. And he did, like, this stuff where, like, he made, like, a restaurant. It was, like, an art restaurant, but he ran it for, like, 2 or 3 years in Manhattan. He did this... he did, like, this performance where he kind of... It was almost like Buster Keaton or something. Like, he took a bath, like, hanging on a clock. Like, he was, like, showering on a clock. Mm. On a giant, like, clock tower. And then he did these things where he just would cut a building in half. Like, they just take a house and just bisect it down the center, and it kind of just splits a little bit. But he did a lot of stuff that was, like, performance-y also in that time period. But he wasn't, like, a Fluxus-affiliated guy, I don't think, at all. There's a lot of people that just... I think when you think of, like, New York in that time period, there are just, like, these certain names that are, like, really well-known.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not, like... If you're just a very casual art fan, like, you kind of, like, know some of these names. But I thought I knew a little bit about this stuff, but Roy Johnson was totally under the radar for me. So it's good to like see all these connections he had to all these people.
Yeah. And I think like in this, John Held's obituary, he talks about how, you know, later on Ray didn't get into email, even though there was email before he died, and he was into faxing. That was one of the things he really enjoyed it.
I worked for someone that only faxed also.
Really?
Yeah. He got email eventually, but
that's amazing. I think
faxing is great.
Get a fax from Ray Johnson would be sweet. And he said he was a letter writer and a telephone gossip, but the same day that Andy Warhol was shot, Johnson was mugged and soon after decided to leave New York City for Locust Valley on the North Shore.
That's why.
And he said, except for occasional forays into the city, he remained very much a hermit. And then John goes on to say he visited him in April of 79. He said, I made a rare visit to Ray's home in Locust Valley. It's called the Pink Swan Home. And he told me I was the first visitor he'd had that year. There were no chairs, very little furniture. And on his bed, a mattress really, there were boxes, and others were spread throughout most of the home. They appeared to be potential materials for his mailings and collage work. And he said, I didn't get the impression he collected all the work mailed to him. I know that on more than one occasion, my own mailings to him were recycled with something added to them, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, actually the movie does have, kind of when we talk about like this sort of forensic angle to the movie, there is like this...
The last 10
very,
minutes.
Yeah, like procedural, like... Is it the police took that video or was it like with like, yeah, there was like footage of them just walking through the house and he's like, Yeah, it was all art supplies, this tiny kitchen, and like an air mattress on the ground.
Yeah.
And then like there was only like one portrait that was facing out. Well,
yeah,
I don't want to give away too much, but yeah, it's in there. Yeah, we've given away everything. Yeah.
Not everything, but it is creepy at the end. And yeah. I don't even think it's supposed to be, but it's just like, oh man.
Well, anytime you see video footage from the 90s, it has a creepy texture to it. Yeah. It's all the weird.
That's why Twin Peaks is so much better to watch on VHS. I watched it all on VHS and I was like, oh wow. And then I've seen it on DVD and I was like, yeah,
it's too clean.
It is in a way. It's really weird, but yeah.
It has a kind of, and then I do want to talk about the suicide note though. Mm-hmm. I thought that was incredible.
Right. Oh, like the what they find in his belongings is not tech. I guess it counts as a note, right?
Yeah.
It's like in the cardboard box and it's a series of postcards that's kind of like open like a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And each one has a, you know, he writes about stuff on each one. And I think he's talking to people.
Talking about another, like a character or like someone historically who had committed suicide. But it's sort of like, it seems clear that it was left at that. It's like a clue that
It was a clue. Like, also all of his artwork was turned inward.
Except for
his portrait. Yeah, and then there was this collage suicide note art piece that was really cool, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so cool to do that. So, I mean, it seems pretty obvious.
Cool. It's cool to commit suicide.
Yeah, I mean, depending.
You heard it here first.
And then there's all the number stuff.
What's that?
Brief number stuff about how, like...
Oh, the 13?
Yeah, like, and he died when he was 67, which
on
is, like, 13.
The 13th of January.
Yeah, which is, like, 6 and 7. And then the numbers of the hotel room that he stayed at or something that added up to 13.
13, that's right.
So it's like he had to, if he was going to do it, he had to do it at 67 because he would have to wait, till he was 70.
Right, six. Yeah.
So he'd have to wait. He has one chance of doing it every 10 years, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, do I want to die in my 60s or do I want to die in, you know, past the year 2000 almost? It's like, does he want to live?
Oh, because it added up to 13.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they found him like at the water post third, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Whoa.
So does it seem like it was like, this is like my mark, like it's my ultimate joke. This is my ultimate prank. Or is it it's a guy who's like depressed but it's like, I might as well just do this creatively.
Yeah. I think it's that. It's like, yeah. I think it's more of the second. It's just like, well, shit, people are going to expect something, you know, like why not?
I like that one line where someone's like, I don't know how we could figure out his death because no one could figure him out while he was alive.
Exactly. That's one of the best parts of the movie for me. He's like, yeah, how do we know about his, if we can figure out his life? But yeah, I think it was just, let's make it cool. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, honestly, like, I mean, everybody else thinks I'm cool. All this other stuff. Like,
right.
Maybe he didn't even like what he was doing so much, but he's like, oh crap, now I have to figure something out. You know, I mean, like, I got to figure something out that's at least makes you think about it after it happened.
Well, like,
whether it's bad or sad or selfish or whatever.
Or no, Crimes and Misdemeanors, Woody Allen movie, the number one therapist in the world about intimate relationships jumps out a window and he leaves a note that just says, I went out the window. You know, like, it's kind of the same, but opposite. Like, he was like, I want to make sure I leave an impression.
Oh, well,
you know?
There is also one really weird part of the police record, which is there were witnesses.
Yeah.
And they heard a splash. They saw a guy swimming.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. Like, he didn't die instantaneously.
No.
He died maybe of hypothermia.
Yeah, it was in
January.
Because
it was like January in the East Coast.
The Village Voice headline was backstroke into oblivion, which is pretty incredible. But according also to John's obituary, it was reported that they found $400,000 in various bank accounts. So, you know.
It wasn't like he was destitute. No, and that's why he was like... because he was like, his career had gone poorly or anything like that.
And then there was a quote by Richard Feigen, an art dealer represented him, who said, Ray was the author of his own obscurity. I think Ray will become famous after his death because he won't be around to impede the dissemination of his own work, which is kind of cool.
Did he say that in the film too?
I don't think so.
Is that just a quote?
That's just a quote.
Article. Yeah. But I can totally see that. Like, it's a guy with, like, people that are like, look, we want to sell your things. And he just made it so difficult.
Yeah. Well, he would show up on the last day and take a shit out.
Yeah. Or just create a whole piece out of the pricing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's pretty incredible.
How much would you charge for your collages?
How much do you have? Not much at all. I mean, like, it depends. Yeah, if I can figure out a cool way to die, a lot of money. But
yeah.
until then, I don't know, like $20 or something.
Sweet.
I'll photocopy it so I have a copy for myself. So I can remember.
Will you take a chunk out if someone offers you 18?
Maybe, but then I'll be biting. So biting on his style.
I do kind of wonder about this thing of like if he had kept going and like the state that the postal, the correspondence, like the physical correspondence thing, would he have kept going to that? Would he maybe have gone updated with technology? We don't really know. I can't really see him. What it'd be terrible if he just turned out to be a guy who just did everything in Photoshop, like in the 90s or something. But it seems like he would have kept up this thing. But yeah, like when.
I mean, well, he was saying he did fax stuff toward the end. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, yeah.
That's true.
He would have evolved it somehow. Or he would have just. The performance stuff could have kept going in all these different directions, too. There was that video. God, we didn't even talk about the video of his. One of his. He had a couple performances on the video. Like, one was
the
just.
Whipping of the box.
I was going to talk about that one because there's a chalkboard thing, which was like, okay, so I kind of think I know where this is going, but a lot of the stuff seemed to be about the duration of like and the commitment level to the thing.
Like
he would take his belt off and whip this box,
right,
and then stick his leg inside the box and keep whipping it with his belt. Then there was that Kafka thing where he wrote Kafka on the box.
There's two markers.
But then he had to like, there's one point where he almost forgot how to do one of the letters.
The A. Yeah.
Like he's like, wait, does A work like this? And it's just like this double Kafka. And he would just say Kafka. Like when I think of like the things like Fluxus people do, it just doesn't make any. I was watched that. And then I looked up this other person that was involved with Fluxus, like Allison Knowles. And it was like, because I remember hearing this audio piece of hers, and she's like a poetry person. And I watched the video. It's basically she has a shoe. Everything she does like it sort of involves her taking her shoes off and slapping them together and then just like saying colors over and over. I'm just like, oh, yeah, I guess this is what it would have been like for him if he was like he would have been maybe 90 and still doing this, you know, like.
So John also sent me this when he said he said when he visited John, came to visit John. John took out all the furniture in his house. So there's only a telephone and a television. And upstairs, there was an open closet, and then John peeked into it. On the floor, there were just two saddle shoes, and on one shoe, it said John, and the other said Cage. So that was all that was in his house.
John. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was in there. That was in the film. There was, like, the John Cage shoes.
The John Cage shoes. So
they were in there.
So when people visited, he would take everything out of his house and then just have a pair of shoes in an empty closet.
This is when your friend went and visited him?
Yeah.
So your friend actually went and visited him.
Yes.
That's what you were saying, right, in upstate New York? Is that where it was? What year was that?
Well, the first time was in 79.
Okay, so he'd been there.
And then he went again, and apparently he had taken everything out of his house except for a pair of shoes.
And how did this guy know Ray?
Because he was also in the
Black Mountain?
No, New York Correspondence.
Oh, okay.
Thing, yeah.
He was in the
And thing. So I have a friend that I used to work with that did a one-man show about John Held, the guy we're talking about. And in that show, he talks about the correspondence stuff. And I was like, oh, I should ask him, John, if he has any memories of Ray, and he sent me this stuff.
Oh, John Held wrote this Bunny Dead piece.
Yes.
Okay, right. Okay, I found that online off like StendhalGallery.com. I think it's the same article. Yeah. It doesn't have the.
And John Held is kind of a mysterious art icon in San Francisco.
So, okay.
Yeah. Just contact him, see if he had anything to share.
We should talk to that guy.
Yeah, we should.
John Held. also, like, I like, what if, like, Converse or Vans just makes a John Cage sneaker now? Yeah,
I would buy that in a second. That would be amazing.
Black and white John Cage sneakers.
Yeah. And there's also the blackboard when he's running around the room with the blackboard, the chalkboard.
Yeah, the chalkboard one. Yeah, like it didn't say how long that went on for. No. But I could just see it going on a whole day.
Yeah.
Where people were just like, all right, I'm done. I'm walking off.
Yeah.
This is performance. But did he call himself a performance artist ever? I feel like it was at that party. Also, like, there was like a guy who's been filming him maybe the last 5 years of his life every, like, couple months.
Yeah.
A guy who's like, is his neighbor or a guy who lived in the same town who was like filming him walking around. And that's like the most footage you got a ton of still photos of him.
Yeah. But
the most footage you get of him doing anything is from this guy who's filming him going to this party.
He seemed nonplussed.
Going to the movie theater.
When they interview him in the documentary about hanging out with him. He didn't seem all that stoked to be talking about it. And that party scene was the best.
He just seemed like he wants an audience, though. Like, yeah, what he does requires some audience.
True. Well, you can't fool anybody if there's no one there to fool, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of thing. So would you consider this one of your favorite docs, Jeff?
Or? Yeah, definitely. And I haven't watched it in a while, and you asked me about the show, and I was like, yeah, let's watch that one. Or
do you think it succeeds in what it is trying to do?
Yeah, I guess in a way, because you don't really get a sense of exactly who he is. He's still a mystery to you once you watch it and it's over. But you can appreciate the mystery that's left behind in a way. Mm-hmm. And there's like pieces of, I mean, like there's some of that art that I'm sure there's some art that people think wouldn't like. But then there's also, no matter who you are, I feel like there's at least one thing in there like, oh, that's kind of cool. Or at least that's clever. You know, like there was that part where they interviewed someone and he made a very simple collage about, and it's got a man kissing a woman, but he has a hand right here with a glove on, and it says right above it, it says "Pals Slap."
Oh yeah.
And it was like, what the guy said was, you know, Ray would make art with humor, and it's like, if you didn't get it, well, then that's your fault, kind of thing, which I think is really great. Yeah. That's what makes me think of that Kennedy thing that I made as well. Like,
what's that coffee break scene?
Oh yeah, that's another thing. That's I think a lot about myself when I was younger. When they talked about that too, how everything was something, like no matter what happened, there was like a clever comment to be made, and somebody was walking across the street and dropped their coffee cup, and he just goes coffee break, but mm-hmm. they didn't stop; they just kept walking yeah. on, and it was like, and it's like,
yeah,
you just leave people with that, and it's yeah. like. Hmm.
Awesome. I used to have this girlfriend in college. She'd always, but you always have something to say. Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, of course.
Our girls just say that they don't know what I'm thinking. I never know what you're thinking. I'm sorry.
So the way we end these is we ask our guests if they can recommend a doc for people to watch that they love. That's yeah. not this one, or a doc that like got you into watching docs. Either one.
And you had like an alternate choice for this.
Yeah, Capturing the Friedmans was really, really good. That was the first documentary. Oh, I did watch. I watched that around the same time when I was going through this phase, and started going to see movies like this in the theater too in Los Angeles. But yeah, Capturing the Friedmans is the only movie. One of the only movies now that I've watched the whole bonus footage of, and it's almost like I still don't know where I stand in a way yeah. on some stuff, but it's just when they point out, I don't know, it's just what some people say against other people, and it's that there's video footage of, and it's like, well, that didn't look like there was stacks of this everywhere and all that kind of, it's just, it makes you think a ton. And, yeah, that was the other one that I was going to do. I don't know if you guys did that or not, but,
We haven't, but it's a great.
It definitely made me watch more documentaries for sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome.
And if people want to see Jeff and the shows he puts on, they can go to Doc's Lab in San Francisco.
Or you can find him on Instagram.
My name's Jeff.
Yes, it is. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening. You can find episodes of SupDoc on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please review, subscribe, and rate.
And you can follow us on Twitter at SupDocPodcast and online at SupDocPodcast.com.
This show is produced by Will Scovel, and our theme music is by David Siegel.
If you want to suggest a documentary or a future guest, please email us at SupDocPodcast@gmail.com.